number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
On the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. A lot to get to tonight as we are heading into a couple of day period where we're going to overanalyze to death the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I know for a lot of you, it's like, oh, God. But you know what? We're really starting to come to a lot of sort of analysis on LeBron James, the Cavaliers, what's going wrong, why they were so embarrassing in Game 2, what does this mean for Golden State, what does this mean for LeBron James? There's so many different angles to take this. I wonder if LeBron James is just, you know, dealing with something a few athletes have gone through. No matter how good they are, they're just on the wrong side. They just came at a time where they could not capitalize on grabbing as many championships as possible. Now, LeBron James is one of the best NBA players of all time, but I'll tell you, this has to be absolutely frustrating to have him in the summer of 2015 decide to go to Cleveland, decide to win a title there, want to win a title there, realizing that he had full power, full control to put the team together exactly the way he wanted. And meanwhile, something was brewing in Oakland, California. It's called Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and they became the standard bearer for the NBA. They became the team, and the young people are gravitating towards. And LeBron is in Cleveland trying to give that city a championship, and there is a geyser of excitement and energy coming out of Golden State that he just can't answer for. It was an embarrassing performance on Sunday in Game 2. Embarrassing. And it's now being seen as, well, it may not be Cleveland's fault that it was so embarrassing because they just don't match up well. This is a team that has lost to Golden State 7 straight times going back to last year. They just may not match up well. And there's nothing LeBron can do about it. He's got defensive liabilities on his team. Everything they do, Golden State can do better. Now, I know the old cliche, and it's been used a lot today, believe me, and I heard this over and over again. Well, it's not a series until the home team loses. Yeah, and that may be true. It's a cliche for a reason because there's truth behind it. Cliches usually aren't lies. But at the same time, is there anything about this series that make you think in the next 2 days we're going to see a change? We're going to see something completely and utterly different? Because I don't think we are. And I'd love to be wrong on this. As wrong as I've been on a couple of other things, I'd love to be wrong on this. I'd love to come back on Wednesday night and the Thursday and say, God, we may have a series now. And then after Game 4, we may really have a series now. But I don't know. I don't think so. I've been around and I've seen this kind of thing before. Because people will say, ah, yeah, but remember, LeBron was trailing Detroit 2 games. Hold on. But you've seen enough sports to know when a team is being beat. And you know the long odds ahead of them. Oklahoma City was up 3-1. And while it was somewhat of a surprise in a small sense, it really wasn't that Golden State came back and won that series. They're a very, very good basketball team. And when they wake up, they'll beat everybody. Cleveland is a very, very good basketball team, and they can wake up, but the only team they can't beat right now is Golden State. That's their problem. That's the thing around their neck that they can't release. They can't unshackle themselves from that. They are bound to Golden State. They cannot beat them under any circumstances. And with Kevin Love in the concussion protocol, who knows? And that's disappointing for fans of this league who were really looking forward to this. Look at the argument that I was making to all of my NHL friends who time and time again told me how much better their postseason was. And I said, yes, but the payoff for what I'm going to get at the end of my journey as an NBA fan is I'm going to get Cleveland, a healthy Cleveland that was rolling through the Eastern Conference against arguably one of the best teams ever assembled in NBA history. One of, I should say, because I'm not going to crown them yet. I'm going to get that. You may get Tampa Bay, San Jose. You may get Pittsburgh, San Jose. You may get any sort of matchup in the end, but you're not looking forward to one. You just want it to be fun and competitive. I'm looking forward to Cleveland Golden State. I said that a couple of weeks ago. I've been saying that this entire postseason. I want to be saying that now, but I can't. Because when you lose by 33, when you look like you've mentally checked out and ready for another game, I don't know what I can do. I've seen games get, I've seen Oklahoma City get blown out by the Spurs. I told you many times about the Celtics annihilating the Lakers only to lose that series in six. I get it. I get it when players go, not tonight. No, I'm not going to try to force my way back into a 30-point game. But this is all about Golden State and their efficiency and everything they're doing. And the scary part, the thing we brought up yesterday, is that Klay Thompson and Steph Curry have yet to be Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. 800-777-2907. Josh Cooper is going to join us from Yahoo Sports at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk some NHL. We haven't done a lot on the NHL in this postseason, but the Pittsburgh Penguins are up 3-1 after beating San Jose tonight 3-1. And Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Matt Murray are about ready to hoist the Stanley Cup. Now, we're going to talk to Josh on a number of things about this series, how good of an organization has been Pittsburgh as they've formulated a team that is now one win away from the Cup. We'll also get into the NHL expansion. But, you know, it could be very, very soon that even if you're not an NHL fan, I hope you do spend some moments as a sports fan watching the presentation of the Stanley Cup. Because even if you don't like hockey at all, and even if you do not understand anything, as Al Michaels once famously said, a blue line from a clothesline, even if you don't understand the sport, I hope you can at least appreciate the trophy presentation, because it's one of the best things in sports. It is. I try to watch it every year, and I'm not a big hockey guy. My wife is. She loves hockey. My son is. He loves it too. It's just not my thing. I didn't grow up with it. I grew up in New England, but I didn't get to watch it on a daily basis. It didn't really become my thing. But watching a team that get that trophy, and for guys on that team who are getting it for the first time, it is really, really cool. Because when a team wins the Super Bowl, they don't look at the Vince Lombardi trophy and say, finally I get to touch that. No, they're happy about the theoretical championship that they won, the idea of being a champion. The trophy is just what you get. Same with the World Series. Guys don't treat the World Series trophy with reverence. Larry O'Brien, guys will kiss it and hoist it. Of course, but they don't look at it the same way hockey guys look at the Stanley Cup. It is different. It's the closest thing I can think of is the green jacket in golf at the Masters, but it's even more than that. I mean, guys won't touch it their whole careers. There's a superstition about it. There's an awe about it. Your name gets put on it forever until the ring is taken and that's put in the Hall of Fame. You get to spend a day with it. It is sports royalty, that cup. And I don't even care who wins it. I like watching them hoist it and skate around with it. When you talk about winning something, you can win a World Series. You can win a Super Bowl. You can win an NBA championship. But the NHL doesn't call their thing anything else than the Stanley Cup. We're playing for that piece of hardware, and it's awesome. I had a chance on this network to talk to the guy that handles the cup, the guy that travels with it, the guy that makes sure it's safe, the guy that takes it on the trips to the players when they get a day with it. And it was fascinating, the places that he's gone. Taking it to graves, taking it out to parties, you know, places where it probably shouldn't go. It's on fishing trips, on boat rides, plane flights to the middle of nowhere. He's been all over the world with that thing. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk some college football because Jim Harbaugh is speaking out on football, on college football, and the NCAA will tell you what he's been saying and whether or not he's on to something, because there is an argument that's out there and that Harbaugh is trying to attack. I know we've had a lot of fun with Harbaugh and his tax on Nick Saban, but he might be onto something pretty big with his recent comments on the NCAA and the state of the game. That's coming up next. Again, Josh Cooper at the bottom of the hour to talk NHL Stanley Cup, and we'll get into Steph Curry and why he's not going to the Olympics. 800-777-2907. I am Tony D. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. I want to say hi to Lori from Oklahoma. She called in just to say hi. Every now and then we like to check in with Lori, one of our long-time listeners on this show. She's a big OU fan. And OU, by the way, and this is, I know this, is one win away from winning the NCAA Softball College World Series. Hey, how about that? Huh? How about that for insight? One win away. They beat the Auburn Tigers. So it's a good year for OU. SportsCenter did a whole thing on this. Like, the football team made it to the playoff. The Oklahoma Sooners basketball team went to the Final Four. I think the gymnastic teams have won national championships. And now the softball team is one win away from a national title. It's a good year for Oklahoma. So, Lori, be proud. Boomer Sooner. All right, 800-777-2907. Now, speaking of college football, we have been talking about Jim Harbaugh, I feel like every other day, with what him in the feud with Nick Saban and these satellite camps. My God, we did a whole interview on the satellite camp issue. But Jim Harbaugh is on this massive camp tour. He's doing 39 camps in 22 states. Heck, he's even doing it in Australia. He's doing it in other countries. All within the rules of the NCAA. All within the rules. However, listen to this. It is so tricky what the NCAA does. So Harbaugh goes to a camp. Like, they just had a story of him going to a camp in Baltimore. So he goes there, and the high school kids are at the camp. They want their picture taken. I mean, this is Jim Harbaugh, for crying out loud. He's a celebrity. He's not just a football coach. He's a celebrity. He's an NFL guy, went to a Super Bowl. He's very charismatic. He was a former football player in the NFL. So the high school students want to get their picture taken with him. Harbaugh said, I can't. I can't take these pictures because the NCAA said I'm not allowed to take the pictures. Then he couldn't do interviews, and then the NCAA said he can do interviews. So finally Harbaugh said, I believe we can do interviews now. That's what we've been told. You were there. You saw what's going on with the changing daily rules. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. The NCAA compliance people are here. They've been at every single one. The NCAA has sent at least one or two of their people to each of our camps, and we've had one of our compliance people at each one of these camps. The notion that they're not oversight of these camps, you've seen it with your own eyes. There absolutely is. Now, that alone is going to raise the ire of people going, oh, okay, here's Jim Harbaugh ready to attack, to feed the beast, if you will. But this is where he continues. And this is why I like Harbaugh a lot, because Harbaugh is a spokesperson for things that we all kind of feel, and he kind of brings it out. When he attacked, when he had fun with the SEC, I wouldn't say attack, that's kind of probably too strong of a word, but he would take jabs at the SEC. He would take jabs at Nick Saban. How many of you are glad he did that? How many of you wish your coach did that? If you're rooting for a non-SEC school, it's just poking the bear and having a little bit of fun, but making a valid point as well. But this is what Harbaugh continues to say. Quote, football gets the majority of the scrutiny, and the rules that are intended to hurt the student athlete, and it makes no sense. That's why I'm pointing this out, because some of these other sports aren't getting it. People are against football. And he keeps going. Let's take lacrosse, for example. White sport, rising, affluent sport. Recruit them in eighth grade, dark period for a couple of days in August, and it's a totally different situation. It bothers us. But if it is a test of wills, we're going to fight for the youngsters and the student athletes and their families and for the game of football itself. Listen, Here's the great thing about Harbaugh. That quote alone makes you go, yeah, Jim Harbaugh is standing up for football. Yeah, Jim Harbaugh is speaking for the student athletes. Yeah, Jim Harbaugh is speaking for the little guy, the kids that want to play this sport that have to go through so many hoops in order to do so. But never mistake this. Never mistake this. Harbaugh, like John Calipari, is selling. And he's selling Harbaugh. Nothing that he says is not true. He's making very, very valid points. But if Harbaugh becomes the openly vocal voice for the young, poor student athlete that is getting railroaded at times by NCAA rules, then he becomes a hero to a lot of people and to a lot of student athletes and to a lot of families. And that, I think, is the brilliance of what he's doing here. Harbaugh is going to these camps, and he is pointing out in these camps why they're important. Right? He's saying, look, these football camps are important because these kids are coming in and they're getting looked at by a lot of these schools. And some of these kids are not going to be able to play for the local team that gets to own the area. And now they're getting looked at by schools that may legitimately give them an opportunity to play and get an education. Okay, simple enough. But when he talks about how, look, lacrosse doesn't have to deal with this, but football does, it wakes people up to going, yeah, well, my son plays football. And guess what? My son is in a situation where he is going to, has to go through this hoop, and he's got to watch this, he's got to watch that. And here's a guy who gets it. Here's a coach that gets it. Here's a coach that if there is going to be like any slight change, he might be on the forefront of it. All of the little jabs that Harbaugh took at Nick Saban brought out into the open a lot of the satellite camp issue. But what he's doing now is saying, it just doesn't stop there. Oh, no siree. I'm going after the whole institution. I'm going after why are we as a sport attacked constantly? Why are we as a sport dealing with hoops other sports don't have to go through? Why is it that a kid can make one little tiny innocent mistake and his whole recruiting process can be overly scrutinized to a point of absurdity? But that doesn't go on in other sports, including lacrosse. And the way he separated lacrosse from football, white, affluent, right? The way he separated that, again, goes after and makes a separation of the two sports so that people say, yeah, if I'm a poor African-American football player, I've got to deal with a lot more issues. And Harbaugh becomes the voice of that. I think this is a brilliant tactical PR move by him. And I think that's why he's important to the NCAA. I don't root for Michigan, but I want Harbaugh to be successful in at least this. He is what the sport is needed. If you love college football, you cannot tell me with a straight face that everything about it you like. You know it's wrong, and you know it stinks, and you know there's something that is just not right about the whole thing. The sport may be healthy, the games may be fun on Saturdays in October, but you know that the way the NCAA goes about this stuff and the way they're, it's just, you know it's, there's something off about it. And if Harbaugh keeps shining a light on it, then he becomes my hero in this, because I'm glad somebody is. Because I've wondered for years, why isn't there more vocal opposition to some of the things the NCAA does? Oh, Saban certainly throws jabs at him. Urban Meyer will throw a jab at two. But I wonder if this Harbaugh thing has got more legs. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs are rolling along in the finals as Pittsburgh leads 3-1. How did we get here? Josh Cooper next from Yahoo Sports. We'll talk about that next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, the Pittsburgh Penguins are one win away from hoisting the Stanley Cup. So how did they get here, and what is this finals been like? We bring in Josh Cooper from Yahoo Sports to talk some NHL. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. All right. We were talking about the NBA finals, and one of the things I'm saying is that, all right, maybe Cleveland is just not the right matchup for Golden State. In the NHL Stanley Cup finals, can that be said about San Jose? Do they just not match up well with Pittsburgh, who have a 3-1 lead?
Well, if they don't match up well against Pittsburgh, I don't think anybody matches up well against Pittsburgh. I mean, this is a team that beat the best team in the league in the Washington Capitals. They beat the defending Eastern Conference champion in the Tampa Bay Lightning, and now they're one win away from beating a team that had really, in my mind, played the best hockey in the Western Conference from January 1st onward in the San Jose Sharks. And this is really, they're just playing such incredible quick strike offense, and that's led to this lead that they have in the series. And I don't think it's a matchup thing. I just think the Penguins are, or at least I'm not going to say they're the best team in the league yet because they haven't won the cup yet, but I mean, they've really played some incredible hockey since they made their coaching switch and put Mike Sullivan in charge. And one thing that I just look at with this team and keeps blowing my mind is the fact that you look at the names of the guys who are leading the way. Now, granted, Phil Kessel's had a great playoff, and Evgeny Malkin scored a goal tonight, but Connor Sheary, Ian Cole scored a goal, Brian Rust, Eric Fair, these are not big names. And I was thinking about this, the Penguins, when you look back at some of the moves they made in the past to try to solidify their bottom forward, they brought in guys like Jerome McGinley, Brendan Morrow. I mean, they really made kind of the big, splashy move. And now they're doing it with this lunch pail mentality. And for a while, I wondered if they could ever figure that out or get that back. And they really have. And that's why they're doing so well, is because they mix in these hungry, younger players with the guys like Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and it's been the right mix. And all the praise should go to general manager Jim Rutherford, who really, even though he didn't really build this team to some degree, Ray Shero played a big role. I mean, he made a lot of the moves that changed the culture here, and they're a really good hockey team. Even in points in the game where you think San Jose is dominating, like, you just know Pittsburgh is one quick offensive burst away from scoring because they're so dangerous.
What are the Sharks not doing in this series that you were talking earlier about how playing the best hockey in the Western Conference? Is there something that has been missing in this finals against Pittsburgh that they normally show up with?
Yeah, their power play. Their power play is awesome normally, and it's not been that great this series. And granted, a lot of that has to do with Pittsburgh and the way the Penguins have played, but one of the big things with the Sharks that they're able to do on their power play is they're able to get these really good set plays off the faceoff. And that's how they score goals on their power play, and I haven't seen that much this series. And that's one. Another is Joe Pavelski's not scoring. And there was one instance, I think it was in the third period, he had the puck on his stick, kind of the right side of the net. It was a bang-bang play, pass from Patrick Marleau. Pavelski's right there and shoots the puck right into Matt Murray. And that's a spot where Pavelski's generally automatic from, and he wasn't tonight. And when he's not scoring a goal like that, then your team's in trouble.
In terms of Pittsburgh, you kind of alluded to how they've adapted and brought in some. You know, they have the stars and they have these sort of hungry young players. Have they always been like that? Has this season been the blueprint for what we're seeing now, or did they make that big adjustment sometime during the year?
I don't know if they made that big adjustment. I think it's just been a long process. You look at when Jim Rutherford was hired, it was almost a knee-jerk reaction to try to get grittier players right off the bat. He traded James Neal for Patrick Hornqvist and Nick Spaulding. I don't think that was the greatest trade at the time, and even though Hornqvist has been pretty good, I mean, James Neal is a guy that can score at will. It didn't look like a great move. And then just some of the other moves he's made, just trying to infuse this team with guys he knew were gritty or from other teams, and that just didn't really play out very well. So I guess what they just started doing was promoting people from the minors, and these guys ended up being just solid contributors, and and players who had that hunger that some of these other grittier guys, not saying they didn't have, but, I mean, there's just something about a youthful energy and a youthful exuberance that really can change the lineup and change mentality around the team. And you add that to the fact that you have a coach in Mike Sullivan who, I mean, I haven't really been around him very much, but he just oozes energy. I mean, he's almost, I feel like he doesn't sleep. I just look at him and the way he talks, he's just so full of everything. It's unbelievable. And you add everything into that and bring in a coach who just eats and sleeps and thinks about the game all the time. I mean, there's a major buy-in factor, and I think that's what we're seeing out of this team right now. But even though, I mean, remember, it's 3-1. It looks pretty bad for the Sharks, but I mean, you made an NBA comparison. I remember the Golden State Warriors were getting completely outplayed by the Oklahoma City Thunder in their Western Conference Final Series, and then they came back and figured out a way to win.
Josh Cooper joins us from Yahoo Sports. We've talked the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. All right, in terms of San Jose, give me an idea, because I know when they got into the finals, it was an end to a lot of heartbreak that they've had. In terms of as an organization, is that a good organization in San Jose, and how much of a heartbreak was it to finally get over this hump and get to a final?
The question is, it a good organization?
Yeah, is it a good organization? Are they well run?
I think it's a phenomenal organization. I think it's incredibly well run. And look, I mean, they have their warts. What the situation with the captaincy a couple of years ago wasn't great. They got rid of a very popular broadcaster named Drew Remenda a couple of years ago, and I know fans weren't very happy about that. You had just the way things played out publicly wasn't good, but I think it's very well run. It's a very family-like business. Or I guess organization, and you get that with a lot of expansion teams. It's not really that corporate, and I think that, which is weird because they're owned by a company called SAP, which is a massive tech company. But I mean, they're just I think that this is stinging right now because this is a big moment for the organization. It's a big moment for the franchise. I think everybody thought that the Sharks would come out and they would look a little bit better than they've looked. And I think that's what's been very difficult for them to swallow is the fact that they haven't. And it's a team that has come an incredibly long way, an organization that, I mean, people talk about how far they've come from the Cal Palace, just the building near San Francisco that they played in when they first started. I mean, it's not just that. I mean, you're talking about how far they've come from even last year when they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, they made so many right moves, and to be in this spot right now, it's got to be very difficult for them and a very tough pill to swallow.
Off the ice, when we get into the offseason, there'll be some conversations about the league and where the NHL is. How are they on expansion? I hear that all the time. Are they close to that, or is that still just something that pops up that goes nowhere?
I mean, the reports are that the executive committee is going to meet this week to try to make some sort of decision on expansion. And I personally think it's going to be Las Vegas, but you don't really know what's going to happen until they actually meet. But it just feels like that's the decision that's going to happen. Las Vegas is the market that the NHL has wanted. I think they want to beat the NFL there now, considering the fact that there's all this talk that the Raiders may move there. And I think they want to be the first pro franchise to be in Las Vegas. And I also think that if it doesn't work, they want to have Quebec City right there in case they can just move Las Vegas to Quebec City instead of expanding to Quebec City. So I think it's going to happen. And is it the right move? I don't know. Like, I'm very wary of expansion. I really like the league the way it is right now. I think Vegas comes off as a little bit gimmicky. But, I mean, nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, you have a very high amount of talent in this league currently. You have a very solid economic structure. It's not the same as it was when they expanded all those years ago, when to me it felt more like kind of a short-term cash grab.
Josh Cooper again, Yahoo Sports, on the NHL Stanley Cup Finals with the Penguins leading 3-1 over San Jose. Great talking to you, Josh, as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, coming up next, Steph Curry is not going to the Olympics. I don't blame him with the injuries, but does anybody want to go? That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. So the news of Steph Curry not going to the Rio Olympics is not very surprising. Yeah, he's hurt. He was hurt during the playoffs. He missed a number of games. Yeah, he looks okay. But if you're going into the offseason, if you're two games away from the offseason, you know, you want to go get those things taken care of. And the Olympics is a lot of work. It's not just flying down to Rio. As easy as it seems for the United States to go win the gold medal, you got to go through camps and you got to try out and, you know, all that stuff. And then you got to go through preliminary rounds, all that stuff. I'm sure that he would rather rest up his injuries. But the question I have is, does anybody want to go? Is this a big deal to today's NBA guy? You know, I mean, is it something that they still like to do? We're going to address this more coming up in hour number two. But again, I'm not surprised, but let me tell you something about these Olympics. All right. They're looking as big of a disaster as I've ever seen it in my lifetime. Now, I grew up in the 80s and the real first Olympics that I remember was the 1976 Olympics in Montreal. That was very, very little. But I remember a couple of events then. The United States didn't go in 1980 because it was held in Moscow. But and then the Eastern Bloc countries didn't come in 84. And 84 is where I really got into the Olympics. I mean, I watched it every single night. Carl Lewis, Mary Decker Slaney, tripped by Zola Budd. I remember it all. Michael Jordan playing in the Olympic Games. I mean, I watched it every night I could. And I was fascinated by it. I loved the Games. I loved the Olympics. But I knew that it was skewed because, you know, growing up with the 1980 Olympic hockey team and knowing the Cold War and what those, you know, how good those countries were at various sports, you wanted to see the United States go up against the best in the world, and they had all boycotted the games in Los Angeles. Basketball was always something that I grew up in the Olympics taking for granted. Because we not only had the best basketball players, we had the best amateur basketball players. Like, we didn't need a state-run basketball institution growing kids and turning them into basketball heroes in, you know, in the countries and then playing in the Olympics and winning gold medals. Even though the Soviets had won in 72, the United States still had the best basketball players on the planet. And when the Dream Team came around, it was like on cruise control for a while, before the rest of the world sort of climbed back into it. But if I'm looking at these Olympics now and I go, look, Zika, it doesn't look like it's ready. It doesn't look like things are going to run smooth. If I'm an NBA superstar and I'm not gearing my whole life around this and I'm not training so I could have this one moment of glory, I don't know if I'd go. Now, I may go for pride of country, but I got to be honest with you, that would only go so far if the Olympics aren't living up to the standard that we kind of know them to be. I don't want to go to, you know, an Olympic Games where there's a virus being spread by a mosquito. I don't want to go to an Olympic Games where the water's dirty, and even if I'm a multimillionaire NBA player, I just don't want to be around that. If the city and the host country can't get it correct, all right, right, they're in a recession, there's still things that aren't built, right? Everything that they said that they'll fix, they haven't. They're still paying off the World Cup from a couple of years ago. So I don't know if I'm an NBA player and I don't have to go, if I would go. Look, the golfers are already deciding against it. Many of the golfers are already like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Some of them are like, no, I'm going. First year of golf in the Olympics, I'm going. I'm playing for my country. Others are like, I already play for my country in the Ryder Cup. The Olympics are getting slammed, and it's sad because the Olympics are pretty cool. And I may be living in a naive ideal, and that's always been my biggest problem. I used to think that the Olympics were this international community of athletes and goodwill, and we would get together every 4 years. I know it's every 2 years now with the winter, but just with the summer, bear with me. We get together every 4 years, and we use those games to promote unity and friendship, but that doesn't happen. It's all corporate. And then we put these events in bad countries that have bad human rights violators. And then we think, oh, this will open up the eyes of the world. And that doesn't happen either. And to be honest with you, I don't think it ever did happen. These games always went to the highest bidder, if you will. And nothing ever really changed because the Olympics forced us to see anything. Remember the uproar when China got announced? The uproar that the 2008 Summer Games would be in Beijing? Oh, we can't go to Beijing. Well, we did. Is it any different today than it was in 2008 when the world's eyes were on it? What about Sochi? In a way, I don't blame Steph Curry for not going with the injuries, but in a way, I don't think I'd go if I was Steph Curry and I was healthy. There's something about this that's not right. There's something about these games that are not right. Let me ask you, and if you follow the Olympics or you like the Olympics, ask yourself this question. Have you seen any positive reports coming out of Rio? Has there been one positive, this is going to be awesome Olympic story? Oh, I know NBC is going to try to give you some Michael Phelps last swim in a pool or whatever it is they're going to try to spin, whatever athlete they want you to know while they go to the games. But every story that I read about what's going on in Rio is a mess. There hasn't been one, oh, you're going to like this arena. Look how beautiful it looks. Look at this track and field. Look at these pools. All of this looks great. Oh, look at the streets. They're paved with gold. None of the stories coming out of Rio are good. They're all negative. The water's dirty. Zika virus. The venues aren't ready. Nothing is built. This is going to be a disaster, and it's 2 months away.